Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys, Florida's advocates for seniors and persons with disabilities. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. More information about AFELA's policies at afela.org. And from the United Faculty of Florida, representing over 20,000 faculty and graduate assistants at 13 universities and 14 colleges, working to encourage lawmakers to fund Florida's future through support of public education, online at myuff.org. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
The so-called heartbeat bill moves forward in the Florida legislature.
There's a better way to love women than to encourage them to go and destroy their children.
Also tonight, Florida's Constitution Revision Commission could be on the endangered species list if a bill being advocated by commission opponents is successful.
What is now known as the Constitutional Revision Commission in today's standards has morphed into something totally different. I feel like it's out of control.
We'll also check out the latest on the private school voucher expansion that was so enthusiastically endorsed by Governor DeSantis a few weeks back, and we'll raise a glass or two in honor of lawmakers who are trying to figure out whether or not to update a number of alcoholic beverage restrictions, some of which date from the era of Prohibition. I'm Tom Flanagan, day four of week two in the lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. Supporters and opponents of Republican Senator Dennis Baxley's fetal heartbeat bill had a showdown of sorts today in the Capitol. Ryan Daly reports Baxley wants an opportunity for the bill to get a committee hearing, and its detractors hope the measure never gets there.
Republican Senator Dennis Baxley is ripping the landmark U.S. Supreme Court opinion on abortion.
It's a somber day for me to confront the reality that since Roe v. Wade, we have extinguished the lives of 60 million of our own offspring.
His fetal heartbeat bill has both sparked controversy and garnered support. It outlaws abortion once a heartbeat is detected.
We protect turtle eggs. We protect, you can go to prison for destroying an eagle's egg. And yet, somehow we reconcile that it's okay to put women in this position and open a doorway that says it's okay to destroy your offspring.
A similar bill called the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act bans abortion after 20 weeks, and another bill would require parental consent for a minor to get an abortion.
It is unbelievable to even imagine that a minor child can get an elective surgical procedure, an abortion, without the consent of a parent.
Linda Bell is president of Florida Right to Life, which hosted the press conference alongside Baxley. Bell says she's been outraged by politicians in other states pushing what she sees as infanticide.
Then we watched in horror as the governor of Virginia, Governor Ralph Northam, described proposed legislation that not only allowed abortion up until birth, but the killing of a born alive infant.
And Governor Ron DeSantis criticized both New York and Virginia for their laws in his State of the State speech. Representative Mike Hill says there are 15 co-sponsors of the fetal heartbeat bill on the House side and 10 on the Senate side, which he claims is the most support by the numbers for any bill this session.
We are 180 degrees out. We are completely juxtaposed to what we saw happening in New York and what we heard the governor of Virginia saying. We celebrate life.
Complete lies. And without a respect, our colleagues have no idea what they were talking about. They're spreading lies, and it was an all-men panel of legislators pushing forward an unconstitutional 6-week abortion ban that we know has been tested in courts. Not only is it unconstitutional, but it's at such an extreme point in a woman's pregnancy where she does not even know that she is pregnant yet.
Democratic Representative Anna Eskamani was on hand with a crowd of advocates who stand in opposition.
We call out our colleagues respectfully on their lies and ask that if you truly do care about supporting women and reducing the rate of abortion in this country, you'll support policies on access to contraception alongside comprehensive sexual health education.
Senator Lori Berman also joined with those protesting the measure. The Boynton Beach Democrat says she hopes the bill doesn't get the chance to go before a committee.
I hope not, but you never know. This is Tallahassee. Things go through that are unconstitutional all the time. We are very clear. This is unconstitutional. I hope it does not get a hearing.
Eskamani says the now more conservative makeup of the Florida Supreme Court is a concern, but the state's principal document may provide recourse.
Florida's constitution has an enumerated right to privacy that is protected, that has stopped many of the bills you've seen that are restricted towards abortion, whether it's 24-hour mandatory delay, most was one a recent example. So yes, I mean, there is concern that we have a Supreme Federal Court now and a more conservative Florida court. So absolutely there's concern, but at the end of the day, Florida's state constitution continues to have a strong right to privacy that I know Floridians across this state support.
Republican lawmakers say they expect to see DeSantis sign the bill if it ever reaches his desk. I'm Ryan Daly.
A few weeks ago, there was a fairly intense campaign across Florida promoting the upcoming meetings of the state's Constitution Revision Commission. Just plain citizens were encouraged to provide input at those sessions as to what they'd like to see included in the state's foundational document. A flood of ideas ensued, and the problem seemed to be that the commission attempted to include too many of them in the proposals they put on the November ballot. Multiple ideas on each proposal, to be exact. Lawmakers are considering a plan to get rid of Florida's Constitution Revision Commission after some say the board is out of control. Blaise Ganey has the story.
The Funiac Springs Republican representative Brad Drake says he often gets calls from constituents when sample ballots are sent, but he says this November those calls were different.
I noticed that there was some anger and some confusion that it didn't make sense. People were asking, well, why does it have like three or four different subjects on there? What does offshore drilling have to do with whatever the other item was, or vaping. I mean, those have a lot in common.
Drake thinks what the commission did by bundling different ideas into one proposal was unfair to voters and also out of the scope of what the group is tasked to do.
By its very name, Constitutional Revision Commission, the word revision or revise, Merriam-Webster defines that as re-examine and make alterations to. But what you'll see in the proposals that were made or the proposals that appeared on the ballots, those were not revisions, those were sweeping policy changes.
Now Drake wants to give voters a chance to get rid of the commission altogether. But Sarasota Democratic Representative Margaret Good questions if just tweaking the group's mission would help.
So I wonder if it wouldn't make some sense to consider changing the scope of authority of the commission instead of getting rid of it entirely and having them actually review the Constitution and revise it.
Well, the scope and structure is there. It's just being abused. I mean, I don't know that the only way to address that is to either to eliminate them completely or another similar method. If you think that there is some usefulness in the Constitutional Revision Commission to be able to exist, to make revisions to the standing Constitution, to limit the ability to put amendments on the ballot adhering to the single subject rule as we do when we file legislation.
Another bill moving through the legislature would let voters choose whether to limit the commission's proposed amendments to a single subject. But Brian Pitts, a regular public commenter at committee meetings, argues the single subject bill wouldn't solve the problem.
You need to go with this one, because the other problem is so what you do single subject? They still gonna put statutory language in the Constitution, which that don't belong there, and that's what they did last time. They put statutory language in the Constitution.
Representative Drake agrees the commission is no longer sticking to its purpose.
The purpose of the Constitutional Revision Commission is to determine if existing constitutional provisions should be repealed, scheduled into statute, simplified, or clarified. That's their job, and I think that what is now known as the Constitutional Revision Commission in today's standards has morphed into something totally different. I feel like it's out of control.
If both bills pass, voters will decide if they want to keep the CRC and if they want to limit the voters' proposal to a single subject. If both get approval from 60% of voters, lawmakers could have two conflicting requests. I'm Blaze Ganey.
Still to come on Capitol Report, as opposition starts melting away, school voucher expansion seems ever more inevitable in Florida.
The House's proposal would allow families with incomes up to about $97,000 a year to qualify.
And at least a few of Florida's alcohol rules could be headed for an update.
Look, if it was up to me, we would get rid of the three-tiered system because it's an archaic pre-prohibition era issue.
Support for Capital Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
On Capitol Report, one of the most contentious issues going into this legislative session had to do with essentially voucher expansion, something called the Florida Tax Credit Scholarship Program, which makes use of money that otherwise would go from corporations into the state tax coffers, but are instead passed along to low-income students so that they can finance private school education. And a long wait list ensued because this is a very popular program. And Lynn Hatter, the Governor Ron DeSantis, and some of the other folks at the legislature decided it was time to do something about this, and it sounds like that time is pretty much now.
Indeed, they're trying to address that wait list right now. There are about 13,000 Florida students who are on it. The Corporate Tax Scholarship Program currently has 100,000 students or so who are receiving these tax credit scholarships. The House and the Senate unveiled their plan to address this wait list this week. We had the House's plan today, and there are some differences. For one, they're going to create a new scholarship system. The big difference here from the corporate tax program is that this new one would be funded with public money, general revenue dollars. If you remember when Governor Jeb Bush initially proposed his school voucher program, it was deemed unconstitutional because of that. So opponents to this are immediately pointing to this use of public funds as sort of a no-go. But one of the things that we heard today in the House was, you know, even those opponents are resigned to the fact that this is likely to pass. Right now, they're pointing to differences in the House and the Senate proposal, and most of those differences deal with income levels. This was initially designed for low-income students. The House's proposal would allow families with incomes up to about $97,000 a year to qualify. So there are a lot of key differences in sort of how will the state go about eliminating this wait list. The House and Senate say, well, we're going to solve it by creating a new scholarship program, but what that scholarship program will look like in its final form, who would be able to qualify under income eligibility, and really how many students will it serve, those are still big questions up in the air.
And despite all of those questions, Lynn, this type of program is still universally condemned by folks who are associated with the traditional public school system in Florida, be it the teachers' unions or anyone else. So the school district people, all of those people do not like this at all.
Yeah, but it doesn't break down on party lines, which I think is something. This is not a real partisan issue. In fact, one of the things that we heard today were public school teachers who say, I'm a public school teacher, I make use of this program. I think it's generally accepted that one size does not fit all. And so you have Democrats in the House's Education Committee who voted in favor of this bill. This isn't a traditionally partisan issue. Instead, it breaks down differently, as you pointed out, between sort of traditional school advocates and school choice advocates. And they're not your usual mix of Republicans and Democrats. You have Republicans who oppose it. You have Democrats who support it. The differences just sort of really break down to traditional versus, you know, school choice advocates.
And you also have a governor who made a somewhat contentious statement not too long ago that any public money that is spent on education automatically makes that educational institution a public school, which raised some eyebrows too.
Well, you have that philosophy, and I think if you talk to a lot of, again, school choice advocates, they'll tell you that, you know, money should follow the student, and who better to decide what their child needs than the parent. And so that's really where a lot of these things come into play. And you heard a lot of very impassioned parental testimony. You had parents who say, hey, one of my kids goes to a great public school, but the public school didn't work for, you know, child number two. I had to send them to a private school. And in addition to sending child number two to a private school, I send child number three to a charter school. So, you know, one of the drivers of this conversation, well, two of the drivers, is from one standpoint, money should follow the student and the parent, who knows best for their child than the parent. And then you have argument number two, which is, well, yes, but at the same time, you have a public school system that some people feel isn't being properly funded. And that issue right there was at the center of a very long-running lawsuit. The lawsuit ran for 10 years over that issue of whether or not that we're funding public schools properly. So you have sort of two different philosophies coming to a head on this one issue. And this is something that we see sort of year after year now.
But a few devilish details still to work out between House and Senate versions, but it looks like that may be pretty well taken care of in the discussions coming up in the days ahead. We'll be watching that too.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Lynn. As Florida's 2019 legislative session got underway, arts and cultural organizations began working to persuade lawmakers to reinstate funding. After several years of decline, funding for the Division of Cultural Affairs took a nosedive in 2018 when lawmakers slashed the total by 90%. From WMFE in Orlando, Nicole Darden-Creston reports on the efforts to get that money back.
Actors Junior Nyong'o and Greg Thornton verbally spar over an open grave as Hamlet and the Gravedigger, respectively, in Orlando Shakespeare Theater's production of Hamlet.
Faith, he would lose his wits!
Upon what ground?
Right here! In Denmark!
The theater is packed, audience members laughing and gasping in all the right places. They have no idea that someone from this production was slashed before the curtain even went up, cut not by a sword, but by a budget.
Hamlet, that's supposed to have a cast of 18 to 20, we did with 16.
That's Orlando Shakes artistic director Jim Helsinger. He says that's just one of the cuts his organization had to make because of the drastic drop in its share of state grant money, from $50,000 last year down to $9,000.
In the Heights, which is supposed to have 24 people in it, we did with 23. So there are these little slices at the body of our work artistically throughout the entire season.
That's not to mention the impact on employee pay and the theater's emergency reserves, Helsinger says. Orlando Shakes is one of hundreds of nonprofit arts groups, theaters, museums, science centers, and the like, that are grappling with the unprecedented cut in state funding. Flora Maria Garcia is president of United Arts of Central Florida, the region's umbrella organization for artistic funding.
The Division of Cultural Affairs funding has gone from a high of $43 million 4 years ago to a low of 2.6. So it's a huge decline in a very short period of time.
Arts organizations don't rely solely on the state to keep the lights on, but Garcia says state funding is flexible in a way many grants are not. Each group can decide how to use it. For large organizations like Orlando Shakes, it can support paychecks or an operating budget. For smaller groups, Garcia says cuts often affect outreach projects that can't fund themselves with ticket sales, like school programs in underserved communities.
So those are programs that go into areas where, in many cases, there would have no arts at all.
Garcia and others are pressing state lawmakers not only to reverse the cuts, but to put more arts money in the 2019 budget. Several of Central Florida's state lawmakers are on board. Democratic Representative Anna Escamani held a town hall in January, and she's working with United Arts and the Florida Cultural Alliance Advocacy Group to push for an increase
back to $61 million to fully fund the about 664 nonprofits who've qualified and are well vetted and ready to make magic with these resources, which would leverage over $1 billion in economic return.
And that billion-dollar figure may be conservative. A 2018 study by the Department of State found Florida's creative industries responsible for $4.7 billion in total economic activity. Arts funding is earning applause from both sides of the aisle. Central Florida Republican Senator David Simmons says he'd like to see an increase, and he's not alone in his chamber.
If we have the funds, I know that that there are senators who believe very strongly that that we have an opportunity to increase funding for the arts.
As the Orlando Shakes production of Hamlet ends to a standing ovation, arts leaders across the state are hoping their proposal to reinstate funding to $61 million will earn a similar reception in the State House and Senate. Nicole Darden, Creston, 90.7 News.
As we mentioned on yesterday's Capitol Report, Fridays, at least during the first month or so of each Florida lawmaking session, aren't exactly frantic times at the Capitol. To further expand on that observation, here's Gina Jordan.
Here's a look at what's happening tomorrow at the Capitol. Nothing is on the legislative agenda. Lawmakers are taking a long weekend with no meetings scheduled. Looking ahead to next week, a Senate bill would prohibit anyone from restraining a dog outside and unattended during a disaster. A sales tax holiday on supplies for use during a disaster is back. Another bill recognizes the value of film and television production as an economic driver in the state and a creator of high-wage jobs. The proposal encourages collaboration between the public and private sector to boost the industry. A statewide task force on opioid drug abuse would be created to research and evaluate strategies for battling the epidemic. The group would provide state leaders with policy recommendations. And rampant consumer fraud has lawmakers considering the creation of a working group to advise the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services about best practices. The group would also focus on ways to cut down on illegal skimmers that steal credit card numbers at gas pumps. That's some of what's coming up in the Florida legislature. I'm Gina Jordan.
A proposal to keep the state's tourism marketing agency open beyond this fall with no change in funding moved forward today in the Senate. But Governor Ron DeSantis's request to provide $76 million next year to Visit Florida, matching the current funding, doesn't have the same support in the House. House Speaker Jose Oliva, Republican of Miami Lakes, maintains the tourism agency's funding should last until the agency's legal authorization runs out, which is scheduled for October 1st. Amid a fierce legislative debate about the insurance practice known as Assignment of Benefits, or AOB, a property insurer this week asked the Florida Supreme Court to uphold an AOB ruling in a closely watched case. Attorneys for Ark Royal Insurance Company filed a brief this week at the Supreme Court in a St. Lucie County case stemming from water damage to a home. A restoration firm called Restoration One of Port St. Lucie contends that the 4th District Court of Appeal improperly backed restrictions included in the homeowner's policy with Ark Royal Insurance. You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, a number of bills that would make changes to Florida's alcohol rules are moving through the legislature. As Regan McCarthy reports, many of them make exceptions to the state's three-tier system that separates manufacturers, distributors, and vendors.
When it comes to alcohol, Key Largo Republican Representative Holly Rauschein says Florida law needs an update.
Today, we are updating prohibition-era laws. We are opening up the free market. We are removing barriers for the little guys, the small businesses.
Rauschein is behind a bill that would let craft distilleries ship their products out of state, offer sales at festivals and fairs, and let distilleries get licensed as manufacturers as well as distributors or exporters. Jeremy Craig runs the Copper Bottom Craft Distillery with his wife and parents.
All we're really trying to do is level the playing field. We really just want to be able to sell our products. We're asked constantly. We're just outside of Daytona Beach in Holly Hill, Florida. We're asked every day if we can ship our product out of state. Most of the people that come to our tasting room are tourists. Unfortunately, nowadays, especially with the regulations on baggage, most people can't take a bottle back with them. So we're asked constantly if we can ship. The other disadvantage we have is we can't sell cocktails or any kind of mixed drinks in our facility.
Craig says letting craft distilleries do what other companies like craft breweries already do would help him grow his business, creating jobs and driving tourism. And Phil McDaniel with the St. Augustine Distillery agrees. He says the changes in Rajine's bill could also help highlight Florida's agriculture industry.
Florida will one day be famous not only for our beautiful beaches and sunshine, but also the wonderful rum that's made from Florida sugarcane and the whiskey made from our wheat and corn.
But the measure is getting pushback from distributors and retailers who say there's no reason to further interrupt the state's three-tier system, which separately licenses manufacturers, distributors, and retailers. Scott Dick represents ABC Liquor. Despite what some distillers say, he's worried the measure won't result in a level playing field.
We can't, as retailers, ship product out of state. And, you know, we favor that restriction. However, if there is going to be lifting of restrictions, we would ask that all retailers be treated the same and allow not only ABC but also the independent retailers to profit from that side of the business.
Senator Jeff Brandis has a similar bill in the Senate. He says the changes to the three-tier system will be minimal.
Look, if it was up to me, we would get rid of the three-tiered system because it's an archaic pre-prohibition era issue. But this doesn't seek to do that. This seeks to simply allow craft distillers to recognize many of the privileges that we allow craft breweries and craft wineries to implement.
And Brandis points out the overall impact on the state will be small as well, because only a handful of craft distilleries are in operation. Palm Coast Republican Senator Travis Hudson says for him, the issue is simple.
Too many times a lot of us say we're free market principled, we're for small business, and then all of a sudden an alcohol issue gets up and some of us get really weak-kneed. And, you know, you've got to be for your principles, you've got to be for what you are, you've got to be for what you campaigned on, and I believe this bill does that.
Brandis's bill also allows wine to be sold in larger containers. Another bill with similar language in the House is also moving forward. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaze Ganey, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Sean Mulcahy. Thanks also to Nicole Darden Creston at WMFE in Orlando. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Be sure to join us again every weeknight throughout the Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys, Florida's advocates for seniors and persons with disabilities. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. More information about AFELA's policies at afela.org. And from the United Faculty of Florida, representing over 20,000 faculty, staff professionals, and graduate assistants at 13 universities and 14 colleges. Advocates for quality higher education for all Floridians. Online at myuff.org.